All right, hour number two. It is the Monday edition of the home team. Chris Brehm, Jeff Dantzler with you till 7 tonight. We'll have Bulldog Hotline just after 8 o'clock.
Vince, let's look at the book face.
Get your questions in on book face and tweeter.
God, that's I'm just imagining Larry Munson and Vince Dooley with the book face and the tweeter out there. That would have been just the greatest.
Can you imagine Munson on Twitter? I mean, he wouldn't have been on there.
No.
Yeah.
No. Somebody would have had to read the questions to him, and he would have just been like, "What? Oh, it's a Dasta Dog 68.
Yeah. Or even, I can't even imagine him going on there and tweeting.
Hell, like, he'd be so annoyed.
Yeah. I wonder if that's – there's got to be – somebody has to have a Munson parody account, though. Of all the parody accounts, is anyone
– Yes. Well, I told you when Mary Beth, there's an evil Mary Beth Smart.
Is there?
I screenshot it and sent it to her. I go, you have officially arrived now.
Because there's evil Kirby Smart.
Oh, evil there's an evil Mel Tucker.
Yeah, well, there was an evil Mark Richt. I think that might have started it.
Yeah, which that was so funny because Coach Richt's such a nice guy. Just hearing evil Mark Richt was funny in itself.
Wasn't there a time, though, that it was like he kind of did take this dark turn
He did for a couple of months.
Yeah, where you were thinking maybe it was just to try to gain an edge or whatever, but I think that was what spawned that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
he grew
a
goatee. Right, he didn't grow the goatee till he went down to
the
Miami, but.
But, yeah, it's the parody account, but my gosh, Munson. We've joked about it, too. David, because you know we've had with all the rain, we've had four doubleheaders so far this season, and if there was one thing that Larry Munson loved, it was the weather.
Yeah,
he loved the weather. My goodness, he loved the weather.
Well, you would have loved this baseball season.
I know. Yeah, I'm just saying, how are you guys going to call these games?
But then it just goes to show you they played that doubleheader Saturday. Yesterday turned out to be gorgeous.
It was beautiful yesterday. My goodness.
But you know, hey, then all of a sudden you got a Sunday off though, so it's not so bad.
I miss that man. Oh my God, I love that man so much. I think he'd be proud, too. I actually saw something that had to do a double take. I guess at Emily's school, they took their pictures, and I guess they're getting their yearbook or whatever. And there she is, Mrs. Dantzler.
Oh, wow.
It's like, oh, my gosh.
Look out.
Whoa, that's not my mom, either. That's
yeah. No, he'd have been real proud. Plus, she's a former movie grouper, right?
She's a movie groupie.
Yeah. So,
oh, my gosh.
He'd have been very happy. But you know what? You still wouldn't have been allowed to go to his movie group.
Absolutely.
They could
not.
Bring dates every now and then.
Sorry, Dantzler.
Yeah.
You're not invited.
Your wife would be allowed to come, but you wouldn't.
I still, the coolest thing that I've ever had happen to me, this is in the old days when the caller ID came up, and it would just say, you know, Chris Brehm on there. Well, I have a friend of mine from Savannah, used to be the chief accountant for Augusta National. His name's Will Hatcher. Great guy. Huge Bulldog. Okay.
You still can't get us around there.
He works in Savannah now. He doesn't.
Oh, all right.
And now, yeah.
He doesn't have any connections left, though?
No, you got to.
He doesn't know, like, a secret entrance we can.
You got a gator in charge over there now, so that'll be tough. Like, if Mr. Payne couldn't get me on, I'd have no chance. But so I had back-to-back calls. So he had gotten me a couple of practice round passes, and I had gotten back-to-back calls from Augusta National and Larry Munson.
Yeah, well, that would have been – you should have framed that.
I know. I was like, oh, my gosh.
See, nowadays, though, you could screenshot that and keep it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the 5 at 5, brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Let's go ahead and start with the Braves, because when I delivered my chock-full-of-knowledge Southern Sports Center – and, you know, I'm mentioning that Alex Anthopoulos is confirming that, yeah, Mike Fultonevich is not going to be on the team's opening day roster.
That ain't good.
No, because, like, bone spurs, that doesn't seem like that's just rest the elbow. That's – you just might as well go ahead and have surgery, right? I'm not a doctor or anything. I wasn't even pre-med like Ryan Tannehill, but that would be like
– that's worrisome.
Yeah.
I mean, if you – obviously, we're in the middle of March. We have not started – the regular season yet. That is worrisome for the Braves.
So
here's what else is worrisome. Who you told me the opening day starter is going to be.
Right now, I mean, you would think the lean is going to be on Julio Teheran to make his sixth consecutive opening day start for the Braves. Now, just to rewind to the last postseason, which the Braves did make, but that guy barely barely even made it onto the postseason roster and did not appear in that series until the eighth inning with the Dodgers leading 4-2 or 6-2 in game number 4. So the Braves wanted no part of him in the postseason last year.
I thought they were going to trade him or cut him at the end of the year.
I did too, and now here we are looking like he's in line to be the opening day starter again. So question number one is this, Jeff. The Braves open at Philadelphia. You might have heard they signed Bryce Harper.
Yes.
Jeff, will Bryce Harper homer on opening day?
The great Jack Bauerly is listening in. Jack, is Bryce Harper going to hit a home run on opening day?
Will he homer in his first Philly at-bat?
If Teron's still in the game for the fourth batter of the game, I've got a feeling he might.
I mean, Julio had a very bad habit last year of giving up home runs in the first inning.
Yeah. That's got to make – even with those terrific young players in that lineup, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be a seller on the Braves now.
So, right now, I think you got three locked-in guys in the rotation. Teron, again – who the team barely even put on its postseason roster last year, Newcomb and then Gausman, which leaves you then with now, you know, a battle for, I guess, two other spots the rest of spring.
I would guess they're going to want Kyle Wright to win one of those jobs. I mean, when they took him in June of 17, because they usually, with those high picks, they usually don't take college pitchers. I mean, they picked him with the intent, in my opinion, that he's going to need to be in the big leagues quickly.
He's having a decent spring. He pitched today, and struck out 5 in 3-plus innings.
He's a dude. We beat him 1-0 2 years ago. Cam Shepard hit a home run off of him. That was the only run of the game. But, I mean, he's a guy. Now, I don't know how that translates, but, he needs to be on the big league roster this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would think you'd have Wright, Tukey Toussaint.
I like Tukey.
Would be in line now. But there's going to be a – you know, there's going to be an opening for an extra warm body in that rotation.
Why don't they just go with one of the young guys then? I mean, just what kind of message is that? It's like, you know what you're getting with Teron.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, the Braves really didn't do anything in the offseason. They've made all these trades. They've got all this young talent in their farm system.
Sure.
But, you know, Teron he's still there. And, I mean, if it's not Teron, maybe it's Newcomb. I would think the line is going to be on Teron because he's the veteran who's done it. I mean, this will be his sixth consecutive year as the opening day starter.
I mean, that's like Necro and Maddox-esque there.
I don't even think Maddox got up to that. I think, like, maybe Rick Mailer is in that
right.
mix too. But
probably I would think – because out of Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz, I don't know if they would just rotate it around. I don't really remember. But, yeah, I would think Necro and then Mailer in the 80s.
I looked at a list earlier today, and I think it was if Teron isn't with 5 in a row, Maddox had 4 straight, Mailer had 4 straight, Necro only had 3 in a row. It was his streak. He had 3 in a row twice, but that was his streak. So Teron has already got the record for the most consecutive opening day starts.
God, with all those great pitchers they've had, when you think the big three in Smoltz, Glavine, and Maddox –
yeah,
and Phil Necro.
Maddox had 4 in a row that Smoltz opened 97. Then it was Maddox again, then Glavine, then Maddox.
So they just rotated them around. And yeah, but to think with those three and with Phil Necro, I mean, 4 Hall of Fame all-time greats.
Yeah.
That Julio Teheran.
And not only does he have the record, but he's got a line on adding to it, 6 in a row. And so Rick Mailer had 4 in a row from 85 – to 88. So Mailer's tied with Maddox for the most.
That's back when the Braves were real bad.
Yeah.
I mean, real bad.
But Necro had 3 in a row, 78 to 80, and then he had 3 straight from 70 to 72. But then in there you had Gentry.
Wait, what year?
It's 73, Gentry? I'm not familiar with him. Gary Gentry.
I don't know him.
Was the Braves opening day starter. Boy, what was their record that year?
Not good.
The Braves at 73?
Not good.
Survey says.
Let me guess.
Nope.
I'm going to go 64 and 98.
76 and 85.
That's not awful.
Although I'm looking at this, They actually scored 799 runs and only gave up 774, so their Pythagorean one-loss record was much better.
Well, is that the year, 73 the year that they had three guys hit 40 homers? Was it Aaron Evans and Davey Johnson? Was that that
year? Yeah, that was that year.
Yeah. See, this is how you get in rabbit holes on the inner tubes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Julio Teheran. So, what, are we saying Bryce Harper is homering on opening day?
Oh, absolutely.
First at bat?
That might be plus money in Vegas.
Okay. Well, hey, Jeff, great transition. Speaking of Vegas, their win totals have been released by a certain offshore outfit.
I heard a Bama fan, they are irate that it's not 12 as their over-under.
Yeah, it's 11.
It's 11.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and take the over, though.
We are being disrespected.
Well, Georgia's at 10.5. Over, under 10.5 wins for the Bulldogs. A tough schedule this year.
That I like that with that schedule that Vegas has got it at 10.5.
We were 10.5 last year, too.
That's a good sign.
Now we've gone 11-1 and 11-1.
I'm going to go over.
Over. Is the what is ramping up the degree of difficulty this year? Teams coming off byes that play us, and the month of November is rough.
Rough. What would be nice, you know, it's one of those deals, like it would have been nice if Kelly Bryant didn't go to Missouri, and it would be nice if Tech is god-awful this year.
Yeah, I think there's a good shot of that,
like,
happening.
And I'm not saying it's at all a lock win, like going to Auburn. Like, I was glad Jarrett Stidham turned pro.
Yeah, now they've got – I mean, they're in that situation where, you know, they got like four or five guys at their quarterback depth chart that'll be battling it out this spring. But you know what they say about that. When you got five quarterbacks, you don't have any.
But, yeah, that November schedule is –
But Auburn's one of those teams coming off a bye.
I know
before they play us. How about that, too? We moved that game to do them a favor, and they went ahead and scheduled a bye before they play us this year.
Mm.
You think maybe we could, like, talk them into not, you know, playing someone the week before they play us?
No, as I don't think they'll go for that.
Is that the quid pro quo, maybe?
But we have, I mean, we've been catching them at a good time these last few years. We've been catching them on the end of some stretches against, like, A&M, Mississippi schools. And we used to play him back in the day when Coach Dooley was coaching. We'd always play him the week after the Florida game. It was incredibly difficult.
Well, that's what, we caught him at a good time 2 years ago, the week after they played Alabama.
Yes, sir, we did.
We got him in that SEC title game.
Hoisted that SEC championship trophy.
So 10.5 with the –
That's back when I liked that building.
Yeah. 10.5 with the inclusion of Notre Dame on the schedule. A&M rolls in.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's A&M? Are they at 8.5 or 9?
Texas A&M is at 7.5.
Wow. So are they not going to be as good as we think?
Well, here's A&M's problem. They play Clemson, Alabama, and us.
Good point.
So I think, like, last year, to go 8-4, considering they played Bama and Clemson.
I agree.
I mean, I thought they had a good year, and they beat LSU in that wacky game at the end.
Well, LSU actually won that game, like, three different times.
I know.
But then A&M wound up.
Yeah. LSU was getting hooked.
Yes,
but
badly.
So A&M at 7.5 wins when you've got Clemson on the road, Georgia on the road, and Bama. They do get at home, but you know that again. We talked about that before, but when you play Alabama, you might as well just play them at Alabama.
I agree. Yeah.
So
after we win the national title this year, we go strutting over there in 2020.
Yeah. And just put it on them.
Say, I'll tell you, this game doesn't even really mean anything. Well, no, we will be in Atlanta anyway.
Yeah. It's a revenge game anyhow.
Like that person told me and Trey over in Tuscaloosa. Well, we didn't need to go to the SEC championship. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, of course you didn't. Yeah.
Well, I'll very much look forward to people projecting that we're going to get blown out by Alabama that week because it's a revenge game for the Tide.
I love it.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what, if we win it all this year, they could beat us in 2020 45-0. I won't care.
Yeah.
I'll be just fine.
If we win it all and beat them along the way.
Yes. They could beat us 45. I say I wouldn't care. I'd be mad that day.
You would. We'd come in here Monday and be like, this is fire Kirby. This is unacceptable.
We haven't won the national title since last year.
Yeah. And well, his record against Bama will have fallen to like 1-4?
I'll take that. 1-3.
1-3, yeah.
I'll take that.
All right, moving on in the 5 at 5. 8 days until kickoff, Jeff, by the way. I'm talking, of course, about spring football.
Baby.
What should we as the Georgia fans be most excited by heading into to spring practice?
I would say, Chris, that these rising sophomores on the defensive side of the ball and what you're going to see on that offensive line.
Now, how much will we see of that O-line? And isn't that conundrum we talk about, though, where, like, okay, the O-line's good, but then these rising sophomores on defense, what if, yeah, like, well, they're not doing anything because our O-line is too good.
Well, that's where it is good for those guys to practice against each other every day.
I mean,
because the defense won't see, really the only offensive line they would see comparable to that would be if we play Alabama in the SEC championship game. So it's great work for those young defensive guys. But, yeah, I'm excited to see that in the new freshman. And like you said, we'll finally get to see Stet the Jet. So we'll see Team Stetson Bennett go up against Team Dwan Mathis, I would guess, in the spring game. So I think there's a lot to be excited about with this bunch. But I would say the O-line and just what we've got on defense. I mean, that the two-deep roster on that defense – looks really good. But kind of going into the season, I'm not sure if there's anybody on there that you would say, oh, they're a definitive preseason all-SEC. But I think just when you look at the way Georgia's recruited and the depth there, I think you've got, as Lou Brown said, we got 4 or 5 potential all-stars over there on that side of the ball.
Is it going to be like last year where Georgia ended up – winning the East,
mm-hmm,
went to the SEC title game, and at the end of the season had Andrew Thomas.
Yeah,
DeAndre
Baker.
As the only.
And Hot Rod, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Hot Rod.
Yeah.
Like, even going in, like, let's just project out preseason. Like, Fromm's not going to be the all-SEC quarterback.
Tua will be.
Now, Swift will be in there at running back now.
Probably.
And Thomas will be at left tackle.
So, those three, the three guys who've, two of them were starters as freshmen. Swift played a lot. Then on defense, maybe Reed. Maybe.
Yeah. That's.
But there's some players over there.
No, I mean, I feel good about it too, but it's going to be like last year. We didn't have really anyone in the preseason making any of those lists.
You know a guy who I predict, and hopefully it'll be after his fifth year, senior year, the pro scouts are going to really like on that defense is Eric Stokes. I mean, that guy, he won the state championship in the 100-yard dash. And, I mean, and he's tough. And obviously, he's a guy who's developed because with that speed, if he was a fully functioning elite football player, the guy would have been a 5-star recruit coming out with that
right.
speed. So the fact that he's worked hard and that he's made himself into that kind of player, that's a sleeper potential all-star there.
Well, he made,
and teams winning him, too, just like with Campbell because of Baker.
Yeah. Well, and he made big plays in that Missouri game.
Auburn, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he ended up replacing Campbell.
So what do you think? Like, let's say Kirby still hadn't listened to me to switch to that 4-3. So Auburn used to run a 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked that. But, all right, so what's your guess – starting defensive front, the front seven. We have Jordan Davis at the nose.
Tyler Clark.
David Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall. What about Rochester? Where does he slide in?
I think he would rotate with Clark and Davis
okay.
at tackle. David Marshall's a guy, to me, he's made a lot of big plays in his career. I mean, we miss that guy.
Malik Herring?
Herring will play a lot.
I think that as far as like the start, I think Clark and Davis are definite starters,
okay.
And then you've got between Herring, Marshall,
Rochester.
Yeah.
All right. How about at linebacker?
We're gonna have obviously Monty Rice.
Yep.
I think Adam Anderson and Brenton Cox are in there, and
you think Crowder at the other inside backer, or is Channing Tindall maybe?
Yeah, I know. Crowder's the. What was he like? He was a running back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's
guys around
got
the ball.
He's got a nose for the ball, but Tindall late in the season, especially in that Kentucky game, came along and started to make some plays too. So I would think it's probably up between Tindall and Crowder for the other three spots. I'm pretty confident in, but then you've got Tindall and Crowder would be the kind of a 50-50 toss-up right now.
Yeah, and then there's another, like, Quay Walker's a really good player. You know, you'll have N'Kobe Dean coming in, Nolan Smith on the outside.
What about, I mean, Jermaine Johnson?
Azeez Ojulari?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have when I say have to, hear Kirby say, like, no, I don't. It's like, I would imagine they're going to have to slide a couple of those guys up the defensive end.
Well, they could, like Cox?
Yeah, Cox or Ojulari, I would think would just.
Jermaine Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'6", 250.
Yeah.
Now, he's a guy, too. He was in for bowl practice. And, again, I was at one practice for about 45 minutes, just waiting to do an interview with Kirby. That was the first time I'd been to football practice since Coach Donnan was a coach. But, you know, for my guys who go, like, they said that Jermaine Johnson looked really good on the hoof.
Yeah, I wish he had – I wish he had been – you'd seen more of him watching that whatever. What's that show called? Last Chance U on Netflix. But the only appearance he made was just that that observation from his now fired former coach, who said, "Oh yeah, number 11. He's playing in the NFL."
So at corner, we'll say Stokes and Campbell, with Wilson as the third guy, and obviously we're in great shape at safety with LeCount and Reed, and Otis Reese.
Yeah,
and I think that Lewis Seen, I would guess, will kind of be the heir apparent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're in good shape. I mean, the two deep on defense looks good. But now the question's going to be, can a couple of those guys just become elite and make that play when it's third and five?
Well, and how fast do some of those, like Nolan Smith?
I would think he and N'Kobe Dean.
They're coming for.
And Trayvon Walker will.
Early impact.
Yes.
Finally, Jeff.
We didn't sign those three guys to red shirt, I'll promise you
no,
that.
No, we didn't. In this day and age, we don't sign really anyone to red shirt.
No.
All right, finally, Jeff, we'll wrap up the 5-5. As we know, Florida State, they have not signed a quarterback in 2 years.
That's beautiful.
Now, Willie Taggart reassured Seminoles fans that he had a plan.
Well, yes.
That plan appears to be Wisconsin grad transfer Alex Hornibrook. Jeff, does that sound like a good plan?
I hate to talk bad about college athletes,
right,
but that guy's terrible.
Well, if you're
he's
Florida,
terrible.
Right? I mean, if you're Florida State, you've had Charlie Ward, Jameis Winston, Chris Winkie.
They've had three Heisman winners.
That guy from ESPN that always likes to put down the
Danny
SEC.
Cannell.
Yeah, Danny Cannell.
Patrick Nix. I mean, or not Patrick Nix. They had somebody with like an X in the last name.
Yeah, Chris Ricks.
Chris Ricks, that's what I was
he was the guy that he was suspended
right.
for our Sugar Bowl.
Right.
And it turned out, he wasn't their best quarterback anyway.
It's like, oh, God, I'm glad they didn't play that. Was it Fabian? No, it was Anquan Boldin.
It was Anquan Boldin,
I'm glad they didn't play him there the whole game.
Yeah. But Fabian Walker was who
he
played.
He was one of those, like, sixth-year guys, too. But, yeah, the point being, though, Brad Johnson,
I mean, another good
Florida State
one.
Has had –
That's how good their quarterback
Peter
room
Tom
was,
Willis.
Is that Brad Johnson was a career backup there.
Right. I mean, Peter Tom Willis, they were loaded.
Yeah. So that's where you are, Willie Taggart. I mean, you really shouldn't need to rely on a grad transfer from Wisconsin
a
year.
I mean, Wisconsin had a bad year last year, and they had a great running back. So what does that tell you?
Well, even when they had, like, great years and he was their starter, it's not
he
because –
He was the weak link.
Yeah, it's not because he was great.
So they only won, eight games or so, seven or eight games with – I think that guy ran for 2,000 yards.
But, yeah, he was, like, the preseason Heisman Trophy favorite last
year. Plus, it was Jonathan Taylor.
Taylor, yeah.
So here's my point to that for FSU fans. Wisconsin had a highly disappointing year. And they had a back go for 2,000 yards. You can do the math on that.
Yeah. They're getting a grad transfer at quarterback from a guy who played at a school in a division that Northwestern won.
Yes. With a 2,000-yard rusher.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Northwestern has a former 5-star quarterback starting for them this year.
Guy from Clemson?
Yeah, Hunter Johnson.
Yeah.
So maybe they should have tried to get him in the portal.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
If I was a Florida State fan, I would be severely concerned.
That doesn't sound like a great plan.
Here's the problem, too. I'm telling you, I know we got that quarterback out of Jacksonville. I'm just telling you, the Gators are putting together a 2020 class. I mean, they've got a back, two receivers, and two defensive tackles. But I mean, it's the deal. Miami's going through a change, and Florida State's in trouble. So, you know, it was somewhat similar to when Meyer was good there. So, you know, that Florida game's just going to keep on getting tougher. We knew it would, but they're going to potentially put together their best class since Meyer was there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mullen's a good coach. Nope. Yep. They had the biggest upgrade at head coach of any school last year.
By far.
All right, that's today's 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system –